patience to allow everybody to be with us. Then proceed, Mr. Ngoma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, the last communication that we've received also came from, Chairperson, not the last communication. Before that, aligned to the letters that I've mentioned before, I was told that I was not audible on YouTube. Chair, we also have a letter which we had received from the EFF, Ms. Mahotwe, which contains questions to Mr. Van Lochrenberg. So as we deal with the other matter, this letter will form part of those discussions. Thank you, Chair. And then the last letter, Chairperson, which also came from Sianeho Attorneys, requesting this committee to assist them in summoning the president to appear before the committee. The letter is dated 8 August 2022 and was shared with the members of this committee. And Chairperson, I'm not going to get into the details of this letter because my colleague, Ms. Ibrahim, will be talking to this letter on the next agenda item, which is the legal opinion. As you would know, Chairperson, you had requested that unit to provide us with the legal opinion on how to proceed with this matter going forward. Chairperson and members, thank you very much. That was it for now from me.
Thank you, Mr. Ngoma. Honorable members, with your permission, I'm going to try and combine the two and ask Ms. Fatima Ibrahim to come in so that when you get into a discussion, will there some overlaps and linkages in terms of some of this correspondence. If you permit, I will proceed and ask Ms. Fatima Ibrahim to table and to talk to us. Ms. Ibrahim?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members. Chair, on the issue of the EFF's complaint against the evidence leaders, as Mr. Ngoma has indicated, we have allowed them until the end of this week to prepare a written response, after which UEFA Chair can consider that and then take that matter forward. So the response is not a response that they will be drafting back to the EFF, but rather a response for the benefit of the committee in terms of the allegations made against them. Then on the cross-examination issue, Chair, that is also something for you as Chair to determine whether you're going to allow for that additional cross-examination as requested. But as Mr. Ngoma has indicated, we do have a letter from Mr. Van Lochenberg's attorneys, which I understand is before the committee, so that can also be considered when taking that decision. Chair, the big matter for this morning is the question or the request rather by the PP's legal team that the committee summons the president to appear before this committee, and members will recall that that was an issue that was raised quite early on in the hearings already. They had indicated that that was the intention. And what followed that was that on the 19th of July, the PP, via her legal representative, addressed an invitation to the president to appear before this committee in relation to the charges that the PP is facing. And that letter, Chair, raised four particular issues on which they wanted the president to appear before this committee on. That was the suspension of the public protector by the president, the review of the PP's report in the so-called CR17 matter, which had to do with the president's campaign to become president of the ANC. And this, members will know, is dealt with in charge four, particularly subcharges 11.3 and 11.4 in the motion, which I'll go through in a little bit more detail. Then on the president's position in the current litigation, where the PP alleges that the president has indicated that she should not be represented by the legal representative of her choice. And then lastly, in respect of accusations made by the president against her, including but not limited to accusations of criminal conduct in the form of perjury, which according to the PP, if true, could constitute impeachable conduct. On the 25th of July, the state attorney who's acting on behalf of the president responded to that letter, and they indicated that the president will not accede to the request to appear before the committee. And Chair, there are various reasons that are put forward in that letter. This includes that the suspension matter is currently before the court, the PP6 testimony on matters that relate to the findings of the court, and she's misplaced in concluding that this committee can engage in a process of what they've called relitigation or reconsideration of those findings by the court. They also argue that the threshold of relevance has not been met, that the president has not taken a position that the public protector should not be represented by legal representatives of her choice, and the accusations against the PPs were actually made in affidavits deposed to by the president's attorney and not by the president himself. Following this, Chair, the PP wrote to the committee to invoke Directive 5.3 and requested that the Chair takes all the necessary steps to summons the president to appear before the committee. And this is a decision that the committee is now having to take this morning. Chair, I note that the letter that was sent to the committee is somewhat narrower in scope than the letter that was sent to the president. The letter to the committee focuses on the CR17 or Bosasa case. And they note in that letter that that resulted in the courts making certain remarks about the public protector, which in turn led to charges 11.3 and 11.4 in the motion. So it appears that if the PP no longer wishes to question the president on issues relating to the suspension, the legal representation, and the alleged accusations made by the president, so I did restrict the opinion in the main to the questions around the CR17 and Bosasa matter. Chair, I think it's helpful to just give members, even though most members should be fairly familiar with the CR17 matter, but just by way of background, charge 4, as you are aware, is what we call a mixed charge. It was a charge of misconduct and or incompetence. And it contains various subcharges. The first subcharge had to do with intimidation, harassment, and victimization of staff. That one can be found in paragraph 10 of the motion, and it bears no reference on what the president is being sought to answer on. Then there is a subcharge alleging that the PP has misconducted herself or is otherwise incompetent in that she failed to prevent fruitless and wasteful and or unauthorized public expenditure in legal costs. Whilst this would be relevant to the CR17 matter because there are adverse cost orders, it does not appear that the PP wants to question the president on that. What she does want to question the president on is the remaining two subcharges, which is the third one, which concerns the alleged intentional or grossly negligent manner in which the PP conducts the investigation, thereby failing to ensure that her investigations are conducted impartially and independently. And the fourth allegation that the PP deliberately seeks to avoid making findings against certain officials, while on the other hand seeking to reach conclusions of unlawful conduct and imposing far-reaching disciplinary measures and remedial action in respect of other officials. So in support of charge 4, Honourable Mazzoni included all the evidence that she used in respect of the other charges, but also new evidence in that all of the court papers to that date in the CR17 matter, which was then concluded by the High Court at that time, was also included as evidence. So the charges don't speak directly to CR17 in the same manner in which they speak to the Frieda and CX matter, which form charges on their own, as it were, but it is included in the evidence under this mixed charge 4. The CR17 report, just by way of background, Chair, on 6th of November 2018, the President appeared before the NA in the scheduled question and answer session. And as per the NA rules, the president was provided with questions in advance and members were allowed to put further supplementary questions following the posing of the question that they had originally put in writing to the president. During that session, Mr. Musi Mayemani, who was then the leader of the DA, put a new question to the president, meaning a question that had not been put to him previously in writing, and which in fact was not related to the question in the writing. So it wasn't a supplementary question as such for purposes of the rule. And the question that he asked related to an allegation that the president's son had received a payment of 500,000 from Basasa. So notwithstanding that the president would not have been obliged to answer that question then and there because it wasn't in accordance with the rules, the president proceeded to answer the question. And he indicated that the payment was in respect of advisory services rendered by his son to Basasa in terms of a contractual agreement. Following that, Chair, on 14th of November 2018, the President then addressed correspondence to the Speaker, indicating that he had inadvertently provided incorrect information in his oral response in the House, and he explained that he had since learned that the payment referred to by Mr. Mayemani was not related to his son's contract with Basasa, which he did confirm exists, but rather that it was a donation that was received from Mr. Gavin Watson of the Basasa into a trust account which was used to raise funds for the president's campaign, which we've now come to know as the CR17 campaign. And the president indicated that at the time of answering the question, he was not aware of the donation. What followed after this, Chair, was that both the DA and the EFF then laid complaints with the public protector, and the PP then consolidated those two complaints, conducted an investigation, and she issued a report, which is Report 37 of 2019-2020, which is commonly referred to as the CR17 report, which was an investigation into the president's alleged violation of the Executive Ethics Code and the improper relationship with Basasa. That report made a number of adverse findings against the president. It included that the president had deliberately misled parliament and therefore breached the code, that he had acted in violation of section 96(1) of the constitution, and that the president had acted in violation of parliament's own ethics code. As members are aware, we also have an ethics code. In addition, the PP also found that there was a prima facie case against the president of money laundering, as defined in the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. And as part of her remedial action, she then directed the Speaker, amongst other things, to refer the President's breach to Parliament's Joint Committee on Ethics and Members' Interests, and to also demand publication of all donations received by the President, because at the time he was Deputy President and would have been bound to declare such financial interests into the members' register of interest. She also directed the National Director of Public Prosecutions to further investigate the prima facie evidence of money laundering as uncovered during her investigation. Thereafter, Chair, in July 2019, the President instituted his review proceedings in the High Court to set aside the report. He argued that the PP had no legal authority to investigate the CR17 campaign as it was a private matter, that there was no factual or legal basis for the finding that he was duty bound to disclose those donations, that the Executive Ethics Code is limited to willful misleading and does not extend to the inadvertent or inaccurate statements made to Parliament, that the PP's findings were irrational and contradicted by the evidence before her, that he was not provided with copies of the complaints received, that he was denied an opportunity to question Mr. Watson orally despite requesting same, and that the investigation was not meaningful, and that the PP had failed to apply her mind to the evidence before her. So this was amongst other things that were alleged, but that formed the crux of those proceedings. The Speaker and the National Director of Public Prosecutions both joined those proceedings to set aside the remedial action as directed to those parties. And by agreement between the parties, the remedial action was suspended until judgment in Part B of the application was delivered by the full court. the full court then ruled, Chair, in favour of the President and set aside that CR 17 report. It found that the Executive Members' Ethics Code only prohibits the willful, deliberate or intentional misleading of Parliament and does not include the concept of inadvertently. And it said that the PP's findings that the President had inadvertently or deliberately misled Parliament were fatally flawed due to a material error of law. So on this point, Chair, I just want to pause to explain to members that the PP had relied on a 2007 code which had not been promulgated. The promulgated code is a 2000 code which does not contain the term inadvertently, whereas the 2007 code, which is not lawfully binding, does indeed contain that term, but that is how the issue arose. The PP, it also found that the PP lacked jurisdiction to investigate the campaign as the contributions fell squarely within the private domain, that the PP failed to act with an open mind. She did not substantiate her conclusions that the President had received a direct personal sponsorship through this contribution to his campaign. It also found that there was no evidence to support the findings in respect of money laundering. And in fact, that the PICA Act, which the PP has referred to, does not even deal with money laundering. That, in fact, is dealt with by the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. Lastly, the PP did not grasp the concept of prosecutorial independence, and she did not have the power to direct the NDPP to investigate any criminal offence or to direct how that offence should be, how such an investigation into such an offence should be done. The court then granted a punitive personal cost order against the PP, and she subsequently filed an application for direct leave to appeal the judgment of the High Court in the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court agreed to hear that appeal. They too found that the PP had misconceived the code by changing the wording of the code from willfully to inadvertently, and that this also constituted a material error of law as found by the High Court. They found that the PP's conclusion that the President had personally benefited was not substantiated in terms of the evidence captured in her own report. And they found that the fact that the PP had accepted email evidence over conflicting evidence was contrary to the settled principle that where evidence is inconclusive or divergent, the PP is obliged to carefully evaluate all the evidence in front of her before determining the truth. The PP was not authorized to investigate whether the President personally benefited from donations made to the campaign or to investigate the affairs of the campaign. The court found that Section 182(1) of the Constitution is concerned with state affairs, and the affairs of the campaign were in fact private affairs. The court further found that the evidence in the PP's report did not support the finding that the President had involved himself in illegal activities sufficient to evoke a suspicion of money laundering, and that she was not legally empowered to investigate such money laundering allegations. Also found that she was obliged to afford an affected person an opportunity to respond to implicating evidence if the implication of that evidence would be detrimental to that person or if an adverse finding was anticipated. And the PP's failure to afford the President that hearing before the decision on the remedial action was taken was fatal to the validity of the remedial action. Lastly, that the PP's remedial action failed to be set aside for other reasons, including that she had ordered the Speaker and the NA to take the Speaker of the NA to take steps in respect of which she had no authority in law, and her issuing of supervisory orders against the Speaker, the NDPP, and the National Commissioner of Police were unlawful. There was no order as to cost of the parties in the Constitutional Court, but the President was ordered to pay the cost of Amma Bongani Centre for Investigative Journalism, including the cost of two counsel. And that party chair had challenged the constitutional validity of the Executive Ethics Code. And that matter was remitted to the High Court for consideration, but the adverse cost order was granted against the President, as the President was the only party that opposed the relief that was sought by Amar Bongani during those proceedings. There was a dissenting judgment by the former Chief Justice, Mogoeng Mogoeng, who found that Mr. Maimane's formal complaint did indeed allow the PP to investigate every aspect of the president's conduct, and that she considered as potentially unethical. He also found that the financial assistance constituted a personal benefit to the president and created a situation that involved a risk of conflict of interest between the president's private interests and his official responsibilities, and that the president ought to have disclosed the sponsorships to the NA while he was still a member of parliament. It found that the emails which the president had admitted as authentic and true revealed that he had deliberately represented a falsehood to the public protector, and this together with the president's failure to disclose the private donations to his campaign ran against the president's obligations as set out in the constitution and the values of transparency and accountability. Chair, there was an attempt by the public protector to rescind this judgment, but that bid to rescind the judgment failed, and judgment was handed down in March of this year. The Constitutional Court dismissed the application for decision with cost. So the status of the matter now is that it's been judicially exhausted. The end of the matter as it stands is that report has been set aside. Moving to the legal framework, I'm not going to go into too much detail. Members are well aware of the fact that all Chapter 9 institutions are accountable to the NA and report to the NA on the performance of their functions, and that our oversight role as Parliament is extended in as far as a Chapter 9 head or functionary can only be removed from office after a finding to that effect by Parliament and a vote in the case of the PP and the Auditor General of at least two-thirds of the NA supporting such removal. So the oversight role is a little bit heightened in as far as Parliament has that responsibility of removal. The Constitution and the Powers Act provides that the NA or any of its committees may summon any person to appear before it or to produce documents. Some members are very familiar with that. And then in terms of the rules of the Assembly, the so-called new removal rules, which were adopted in 2019, specifically set out the powers and functions of this committee. And it says that this committee must conduct an inquiry and establish the veracity of the charges and report to the NA. It must ensure that this inquiry is conducted in a reasonable and procedurally fair manner within a reasonable time frame. It must afford the holder of the public office the right to be heard and to be assisted by a legal practitioner or other expert, and has all the powers and functions applicable to any other parliamentary committee. Chair, we further adopted terms of reference, members will recall, and that TOR reiterates that this process is not a judicial or quasi-judicial process. It's inquisitorial in nature, and that the principle of fairness is paramount to the manner in which the committee conducts the inquiry, that the committee will invite witnesses to answer questions relating to the subject matter of the inquiry and may use its powers of subpoena if a witness refuses to attend voluntarily, and that the PP may call witnesses and the committee and evidence leaders shall have a right to put questions to those witnesses. Chairperson, once the hearing portion of this process commenced, there were directives that were issued, and those directives were subsequently also amended, but the amendment doesn't bear any reference on the parts of the directive that are relevant for us today. But the directives, Chair, when developing it, we had due regard to the fact that the PP might find difficulty in securing the presence of witnesses, because the power of subpoena obviously lies with the committee. So what was done, Chair, on your direction, was that we built in a procedure where if a witness does not agree to appear voluntarily on the request of the PP may then request the committee to invoke its powers of subpoena. That, Chair, though, is not an automatic right. In other words, the simple request made to the committee does not guarantee that the committee is then obliged to subpoena a witness. The committee can only subpoena a witness in terms of the Act and other applicable laws. Chair, I must mention that Directive 3.2 emphasizes what is in the removal rule. It elaborates that the evidence, only evidence relevant to determining the veracity of the grounds of incompetence and or misconduct as set out in the motion should be put before the committee, and any evidence that is not so relevant that may be placed before the committee should be disregarded. Chair, in terms of making the decision, the important points for the committee now to bear in mind is that the power to summon is an information gathering tool, and it's meant to facilitate and strengthen the execution of Parliament's oversight mandate. It allows for us to exercise our oversight mandate even in cases where an individual entity would otherwise be reluctant to voluntarily appear. But it's not an unfettered power. I often, when I advise committees, advise that it really is a power of last resort. We should only summon persons for the purpose of performing the constitutional and statutory obligations, including holding them to account and maintaining oversight related to the performance of public functions. Each individual committee would also then further be restricted to only summoning those persons who may be able to answer questions or produce information related to that committee's particular mandate. So where a committee dealing with transport matters may validly subpoena somebody from that department, it would be more difficult for a completely unrelated portfolio committee to summon the same person because that committee, that latter committee, has no role to play in that oversight. Chair, it's further contended that summoning is an extraordinary power. It should only be exercised where it's objectively necessary. And I refer the committee to the case of the Secretary of the Zondo Commission versus President Zuma. That is a matter that went before the Constitutional Court, where the court said that it cannot be gainsaid that the Commissions Act, and that would be the act that authorised commissions of inquiry to subpoena witnesses, authorises serious limitations of fundamental freedoms and rights guaranteed by the Bill of Rights. To mitigate the intrusion upon individual rights, the Act restricts its application to a commission established for the purpose of investigating a matter of public concern. So even commissions of inquiry cannot willy-nilly decide to simply subpoena persons. Their test over there was matters of public concern. Our test, as I've explained, is whether the evidence would be relevant to the grounds in the motion. Chair, in that particular matter that involved former President Zuma, some of the things that the court considered there was that the appearance of President Zuma was absolutely necessary for the performance of that commission's functions. It noted that he was the subject matter of various allegations contained in the terms of reference of the commission, and that these placed the former president squarely at the center of that investigation into state capture. Furthermore, the court noted that certain matters fell particularly within the personal knowledge of the former president, and that some of these matters may not be properly investigated without his participation in that process. Chair, there is another case that I've also made reference to. In fact, it happens to be a case that the public protector was involved in against the government employee medical scheme, where the Supreme Court of Appeal noted that subpoena powers are extraordinary coercive powers that are generally reserved for courts. This means that where the power is granted to a body other than a court, the power should be interpreted restrictively. Subpoenas should accordingly only be issued where there is an appreciable risk to be judged objectively, that the evidence cannot be obtained by following a less invasive route. In terms of the ways forward, Chair, I think it's fairly clear that this committee can only use its constitutional powers to summon the President or any other person for that matter, Chair, to provide information that is necessary for it to determine the veracity of the charges. On this point, Chair, I just want to mention that regardless of the name of any other person you could add to this opinion, it wouldn't make a difference. The legal advice would be the same. So, Chair, I have noted that the PP's request to the committee is apparently narrower than the request to the President, which raised other issues around the suspension, comments that the President is alleged to have made, and so on. But I just wanted to note that in terms of those, I'm fairly clear that the committee is neither empowered nor seized with any inquiry into the suspension of the PP, which is a matter which is a prerogative of the President. And the appropriate forum to deal with any issues related to that would be the courts. So even if this committee were to decide to subpoena the President, certainly no questions should be put in terms of those additional matters that appear to have been dropped in the request to this committee now. Chair, I do take note of the fact that both Mr. van Loffenberg and Pillay provided evidence to the committee in relation to reports issued by the PP wherein they were mentioned in those reports and their versions were negatively affected or adversely affected by those reports. And whilst the President similarly is the subject matter of the CR17 report, I do submit that he's distinguishable from those two witnesses, Chair, insofar as those two witnesses' appearance before this committee followed our call for public permission. They responded to that call. So they have neither been summoned or invited as such to give evidence. Rather, these was a response to a call to any persons that had information on the subject matter of the inquiry. Chair, the President has also made no submission to Parliament or this committee calling for the removal of the PP or otherwise tendering any information for the consideration of this committee in relation to the charges. To date, Chair, the committee has taken a very restrictive approach on the issuing of summons, in line with the principles that I've outlined. Members will know that only one summons has been issued thus far, and that's in relation to Mr. Kikana. That chair was on the back of a protected disclosure that Mr. Kikana himself had given to the former speaker, in which disclosure he indicated that he had personal knowledge or first-hand knowledge of a number of matters that form the subject matter of this inquiry, in fact, to be more specific, the CX and the Frieda Dairy matter. And when he was then approached to appear voluntarily before the committee, his participation could not be secured, and we then issued summons because of the fact that his previous affidavit had indicated personal knowledge on these issues. Chair, in making this determination now, the committee should take the following into account. The PP is requesting that the President is summoned to answer questions in relation to a matter that is already settled by the court. The President, as the subject matter of that CR17 report, would not have been involved in the investigation, drafting, or issuing of the report. And that is the process that this committee is ultimately scrutinizing. The President's version in relation to the events that led to the complaints and the challenges to the report forms part of the court record and is contained in sworn affidavits. So the President has deposed to affidavits where he sets out his evidence on the matter, and that of course is readily available if it is in the public domain. Whilst Parliament must certainly exercise oversight over the President, Chair, this committee is not mandated to conduct such oversight over the President. The singular task, as I've been insisting on this committee, is to establish the veracity of the charges. Thus, the oversight process that this committee is engaged on relates to the public protector, not the President. certainly the president may have to answer questions on various issues in other parliamentary forums, but not in this committee in relation to the CR17. The president also may have an executive function to perform after the parliamentary process and therefore should not likely be drawn into these proceedings at this preliminary stage. Chair, in conclusion, there is no legal impediment that prohibits this committee from summoning the president or any other person to appear before the committee. But the committee must satisfy itself that in so doing, the person who is being summoned is able to provide the committee with information that is necessary for the committee to perform its function, which is to determine the veracity of those charges, and that the information sought is within the personal knowledge of that person and not available through other less restrictive means. Chair, if the committee is of the view that the president's presence is necessary, I advise that in the spirit of cooperative governance, that the committee itself first invites the president to appear before proceeding with the issuing of summons, notwithstanding that the president has received an invitation and declined such invitation from the PP. Chair, that is my submission, and I leave it to the committee to determine the way forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Ms. Fatima Ibrahim. I realize that both in the conceptualization of putting together the legal opinion and how you ran walk through it with us, there would have been this comprehensive approach in trying to apply your mind on the issue. So thank you very much for the work. It's quite a detailed in order to make sure that you would have covered quite a number of areas. On that, honorable members, I'm going to invite you to make your contributions and comments or clarities, combining both the correspondence we would have received as well as the presentation of this legal opinion. I will now invite if there are any members who want to contribute. If you don't, that's also allowed. So I will note the hands. I note Honorable Lola. That's the hand I have. And Honorable Jane Malaniso. I guess those are the only two hands I have, meaning other members would have been covered by the issues. Honorable Nola?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think starting from the correspondences, I think they are in their nature assisting. In that there is already a plan to meet and look over some of the issues that have been raised before the end of this week, which I think is assisting the committee. On the issue of recalling witnesses in the form of Mr. Pillay and Mr. Lochrenberg, I think both Mr. Lochrenberg and the Honorable Maotwe have assisted the process already, which, Chair, I think we must prioritize that in such situations, let members send their questions in writing. I'm suggesting that, Chair, because we already have got a serious problem of running behind the program of the committee. We have now extended the time at which the inquiry is going to proceed. And times are changing, Chair, because remember, when we resumed the inquiry, it was during the time of the recess. Now Parliament is reopening, and we may have serious problems because a number of honorable members in this committee are serving in other various committees. So I think let's prioritize
the questions in writing in respect of the witnesses that have already appeared before us when there are matters that are still pending. Let's prioritize that. The last issue, Chair, which relates to summoning the president or subpoenaing the president to appear before the committee, I think the legal opinion is spot on. A lot of the matters, Chair, that are raised in the legal opinion do not really resonate with the mandate of this committee. A number of issues, if you still remember, if I may mention one or two. At the start of the inquiry, we, this committee, have taken a decision that the issue of the suspension of the public protector does not form part of this proceeding. We have agreed or to into that effect. A number of issues said that are being raised in respect of why should the president come here will not assist the actual mandate that this committee is seated with. I wish to move to this committee that there is no need to subpoena the president. The matters that which have been raised are not relevant to the matters whose veracity we need to check in this committee. So the issue mostly is the relevance. His testimony in respect of what has been raised will not assist the proceedings of this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Maula.
Chairperson, my hand is up, but it seems as if he did not realize it. It's Comrade Violet.
Yeah, out of order, Comrade Violet. I've noted your hand. Please don't be out of order. Mute. I now recognize Honorable Jane Mananiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation from Fatima and as well from Tembinkosi. One would want to start by saying that Chairperson, on other issues I'm covered by Honorable Ngola. However, one would want to start on the issue of the president being subpoenaed. One would want to firstly indicate that on point 4 of the terms of reference, it is clear that this is not a judicial process. So some of the issues they have went at length in terms of the legal opinion that other issues have been exhausted. So for me, subpoenaing the president will be irrelevant for us. And we have always emphasized on the issue of bringing the witnesses before based on the mandate of this particular committee. So for me, one would want to echo the same sentiment that the president to be subpoenaed by this particular committee, it will be the waste of time. So that one doesn't support. However, Chair, I just want to as well support the fact that perhaps you need to meet with the evidence leaders and check on what could be the importance of recalling other witnesses and perhaps prioritize on issues that are relevant and check with yourself as well as mandated by this particular committee to check if there's a need for them to come back. And then you would then check all of you as a team to ensure that we bring them if there's a need. But if there's no need, based on the issues that have been exhausted previously when they came for us, we don't need to call them. So that's my input with regards to those who are supposed to be recalled as per the correspondence from Advocate Dalimpofu as the evidence leader for the PP. So I just want you as the collective to actually meet and ensure if there's a need for them to come back. But if there's nothing that they're going to give differently from what they have given us as the particular portfolio committee, then we must not call them, subcommittee must not call them. Lastly, Chairperson, I just want to emphasize on the issue of, this particular committee being derailed from their from our mandate. It is very worrying, and one would want to say in this particular platform that we can see that there's some delay tactics that is being played here, and we must take our community serious to ensure that we do what we have to do within our time frame. And if there's a need to go beyond, that process must not be done just for, you know, malicious issues, but it must be on the basis that we really need to, you know, do what we just have to do as this particular committee. So, Chairperson, don't allow yourself being abused in terms of being tolerant and biased on other issues that you can see that they need to be dealt with as ASAP in terms of you advising to say perhaps this needs to be done or we cannot do it as this particular subcommittee. But however, Chair, let me thank as well the legal team for actually taking us through the matters before us. And one would want to applaud them for timelessly guiding the portfolio committee to actually execute their mandate. And we hope that they would as well assist you as you would be consolidating our future program to ensure that we finish on time this particular process. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mananiso. I recognize Honorable Heron.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think just 2 points with regards to the recalling of Mr. van Lochenberg and Mr. Pillay. Although I've heard and we've heard that this process is not a judicial process, I think we have to remember that the Constitution protects the incumbent by providing a very high threshold for the removal of the incumbent. And therefore, though this process is not judicial, it is not a casual or informal process. And I think it would be procedurally unfair to deny the public protector the right to conclude her cross-examination of those two witnesses. If there is cross-examination that was not concluded, and we know that there was because her legal team objected when we closed that cross-examination down, I think that she should be allowed to conclude the cross-examination of those two witnesses in order to meet what I think is quite a high threshold of procedural fairness that is thrust upon us by Section 194 of the Constitution, which protects the public protector from an arbitrary removal. Then with regards to the subpoena of the President, I think that the legal opinion provided by the legal services was very helpful, and that before making a decision that the President should not be called or cannot be called, I think that the legal team for the public protector or the public protector herself needs to submit a substantive motivation that meets the very high standard of relevance that the legal opinion sets out. I don't think we should simply say the President's evidence is irrelevant. I think that the public protector has an obligation to convince this committee that the evidence that the President could give is relevant and in what respect. And I think their letter doesn't provide that motivation at all, just simply requests that he be subpoenaed and provide some general and lacking in specificity basis for that subpoena. So I think that we as a committee need to ask that the public protector indicate with some specificity why the President's evidence would be relevant and in what respects. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Heron. And I recognize Honorable Melder.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. I'm just going to react to the question whether the President should be summoned or not. Let me first start off by saying that since 1994, this is the most extensive process that any committee of Parliament has ever gone through to come to a conclusion. And I understand that the Constitution gives us a certain mandate and that there's a certain threshold. But there should be no doubt that this has been the most extensive process since 1994 to deal with an issue in terms of the parliamentary process. And there can be no talk, with all due respect, of acting haphazardly or coming to an early, easy conclusion, et cetera, et cetera. I think the committee has bent over backwards to do exactly the opposite. That's just the first point. Secondly, I think that the Public Protector's legal team did indicate why they would like to call the president and why they would like to summon the president. And I think that issue is basically clear. We should also be aware of the fact that nobody could argue afterwards that the committee took the decision, whatever decision we may take, haphazardly in terms of whether the president should be summoned or not. Because we've gone through a very extensive legal opinion. Colleagues were able to study that beforehand. We discussed the whole question of the legal opinion, and I think the legal reasoning is absolutely sound in that legal opinion that we have received. If I may say, from my point of view and my perspective, I support what the legal opinion basically says, and I do not think that there is any need for the president to be summoned with regard to this specific process. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Honorable Melda. I now recognize Honorable Siwela.
Thank you, Chair. And sorry, Chair, I don't want to be a person who has got no listening skills. I thought you didn't observe my hand. I apologize for that because I must get permission from the Chair to be able to speak. Chair, I don't want to waste any more time. I just want to put a rider to those speakers who have spoken that we support the legal opinion. It sounds very, very well, because this committee has got a particular mandate, and we must not lose focus, we must not deviate from our mandate. If we do that, Chair, we are trying to risk this process, because we'll find out that we're no longer going to be within the time frame we have adopted. So my humble appeal is that let's respect these legal opinions, because they are clear. We can't call the president. And again, I support the issue of the suspension. That is the president's prerogative, but it is not within our mandate. So we are not going to allow or to support to call the president, because the president is not the witness on the charges laid against the public protector. So to be able to be fair in this process, let's stick to the constitution and the rules of the house. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Suela. Honorable Jagude.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you and my colleagues. Honorable Chairperson, let me start by saying that I fully agree with the legal opinion that has been presented to us by Ms. Fatima Ibrahim. And also I agree with my colleagues on the sentiments that they have expressed. When it comes to the issue of recalling witnesses, I think, Honorable Chair, if my memory serves me right, we had Mr. Van Lochenberg more than one day as a witness. So I really don't think there is anything new that he will present other than what he has already presented to the committee for the past for the 2-3 days that we were with him. And also, if we will allow that to happen, Honorable Chair, we will be running a risk of recalling all the witnesses to come back, of which as a committee we have a time frame that was set for us to conclude this process. So I don't agree with recalling. So if there is a clarity that anyone would want from Mr. Van Lochenberg, I want to agree with the stance that has been taken by his legal opinion that anyone can write to them with regard to that. Then on the calling of the president, I really agree with the legal opinion that the president is not a witness in this regard, and it will be irrelevant for this committee to call the president to come and appear before this, because as per the charges that we are dealing with as this committee, there is no way and nothing that will warrant the president to appear before this committee. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ragud. I now recognize the last two hands. I see there were new hands that came up. It will be Ms. Sukas, Ms. Mahau, and Maneli. Honorable Sukas.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, Chair, I will just keep my video off. I'm unfortunately in the Northern Cape. So just for connectivity, and I do apologize if there is some background noise. Chair, I really want to first start by raising the issue of costs. It would be very helpful. I think it was Honorable Hendricks that has raised the issue right in the beginning. And I think our proceedings at the moment, as Honorable Mola said, there is the time issue as well as the commitment that several members of this committee have in terms of our other parliamentary committees that we serve on. But most importantly, in terms of what was raised by Honorable Hendricks, is the issue around costs. And I think it would be very good if we can get an idea of what is the current cost. The cost of counsel, because we do have a constitutional duty to the people of South Africa in all of this. That is the one point. And we are in a meter taxi year that is obviously raking up costs. And so my question, my issue around costs is within that context. So if we do run overtime, it does have it makes a material difference to the cost for the South African taxpayer. Then secondly, I want to raise the issue around the calling of the witnesses, Mr. Pillay and Mr. Van Lochtenberg. And I want to raise the issue around the protection of witnesses specifically. Firstly, both gentlemen have been before this committee, and we've had Mr. Van Lochtenberg and Mr. Pillay where questioning as same questions has been asked over a period of 2 days in the case of Mr. Van Lochtenberg. I'm not sure if it was 3 days. And then we had, of course, Mr. Pillay the whole day. So I think, Chair, I think it would, if there are questions to these witnesses, then by all means, let it be done then in writing, as was brought forward by Honorable Nola in terms of that issue. But in terms of the protection of witnesses, the concern here is that this becomes a new form of injustice towards people. And I really feel that as a committee, we cannot allow that to happen. We've had witnesses like Mr. Samuel that has been called a public attacker. He's been he was asked if he knows how to count from 1 to 10. All of these things plays a huge role in terms of witnesses are experiencing this committee and the process, as well as how future witnesses comes before this committee. And we cannot disregard the impact that the cross-examination has had on the witnesses that appeared before the committee last week. For me, I really feel that it is not a joke for somebody to be emotionally terrified or to be intimidated in a parliamentary process. It is not okay for us to allow that to happen. And we could see the difference in terms of the witnesses that appeared last week, that people are feeling intimidated, I'm certain of that, just from what I observed. So I want to speak about the protection of witnesses as that appears. And also with what came out with Mr. Samuel was the issue of him, being charged on perjury. And I want to understand who has the authority to lay those charges. If witnesses are going to be threatened in this way, they must be protected. So they therefore need to be allowed then to have counsel to assist them. And where they cannot afford it, then appoint a senior counsel who will protect the witnesses and to defend their rights. Because, Chair, it cannot, we need to look at even the calling of these witnesses within the aspect of the protection of witnesses, the cost to the South African taxpayer, and the cost of us going beyond this. And I fully support the issue, fully support the legal position around the calling of the president. But I really feel as a committee, we really need to review the issue of protecting witnesses, because this is not the court, this is parliament, and it is the people's house. And people are coming before their public representatives stating their case, and we cannot allow them to be intimidated, discriminated, and to be bullied in the way that they are. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sukas, Honorable Mahau.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all. My point, Chairperson, is that let us not rush the process. We are aware of the fact of the taxpayers' money, but we need to be fair to all of us, that is the committee, the witnesses, and the public team. My suggestion or my opinion is that if CP feels that she needs more time to cross-examine the witness certified, and even the response from the LC feels that they need to immediately, we will be reached our goal. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mahau. The last time, Mr. Maneli, I see Mr. Aaron is asking for a second bite. I will give you that. Honorable Maneli.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and greetings to the members. Just a few points, Chair, to also join those that leave the discretion to yourselves in that engagement with the two teams to look at whether that request, firstly from a point of relevance, because there were areas that people looked at in covering, and just also take into account, Chair, that in terms of the directives, it is not just the cross-examination that happens. There are other processes that follow thereafter, and that also then determines the time. I hear you well. You were saying hurry but slowly. So we need to create that balance. The other point to really emphasize is it's really that as it relates to the legal opinion, the point to emphasize is that this has nothing to do with the president. If you take foot one of the legal opinion, it's very clear it talks to any other witness that you would call. That your yardstick will be the relevance of the matter before the committee. And in this case in particular, the committee is not summoning the president to come before the committee, but necessarily this is the request made. And I will take it that what we are given as information, it's important as we weigh that. That request would have been the same request that must go to the witness directly that you are asking for to come before the committee. And if the information presented to us begins to tell us that on one hand you would have asked broad issues, including suspension and so on, as right to the witness, in this case the president, then getting to the committee, you narrow it to something else. You will also do not know what to examine when a person comes before you. That alone deals with that threshold about relevance. So I just thought it's important that we do not leave the session as though this is about the president. But if it was any other witness, would we arrive at the same conclusion? and the legal opinion begins to tell us that that would have been the same standard that gets used. And that is the relevance. And at this point, that relevance could not be proven beyond reasonable doubt. So I thought it's important just so that we also do not come again to a point that there may have been procedural unfairness. And I think throughout the process, the committee has been struggling in balancing that irrelevance with also the fairness that you need to still show to everybody that they could have been here by the committee. And I think it's also an important point to conclude with, that you've kept that standard. And I think South Africans do see it for themselves, that process being new as it is, but there's every effort to try and adjudicate facts that come before us than anything else. And at this point, the legal opinion is very clear on this matter, even if it was not the president, but any other witness. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable. I'm now going to conclude with the second bite. There are two members, Honorable Heron, followed by Honorable Paola.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just wanted to respond to some of the comments or input that people are supporting the legal opinion. Because I read the legal opinion, and the legal opinion doesn't tell us whether we should call the president or not. So I don't know what people are agreeing with. The legal opinion at paragraph 44 says the summonsing process has been a restrictive approach, which I agree with. Paragraph 45 sets out some of the things that the committee should take into account in considering whether to ask the president to give evidence. And then paragraph 46 is really what I was asking that we do, which is for the public protector to indicate the basis upon which we would call the president as a witness. And it says, paragraph 46 of the legal opinion, that the person should be able to provide the committee with information that is necessary for the committee to determine the veracity of the charges, and the information sought is within the personal knowledge of the person and not available through other less restrictive means. So my point was that the letter received from the public protector's attorneys did not set out why the president should be called. And I agree with paragraph 46 of the legal opinion, but that paragraph leaves it open for us to ask the public protector's legal team to meet the standard. So when people say they agree with the legal opinion, I'm not quite sure what they mean, because the legal opinion does not advise this committee not to call the president. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Heron. The last one, Honorable Paula Nola, and then we'll try and summarize.
Thank you very much. Chair, if you check paragraph 4, it tells that there was a letter that was sent requesting the president to appear for the committee, and the grounds for that request are stipulated there. 4.1 to 4.4, that stipulated there why the president shall appear. I really do not think, Chair, respectfully, that there are any other new facts that may arise on the reasoning behind the calling of the president. The last issue, Chair, I wanted to remind the committee on is that the rules of the National Assembly direct us to proceed with the inquiry within a reasonable time. Now, if we wish to go back and forth, we'll not be in adherence of the reasonable time and thus be unfair to the public protector herself. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to summarize in terms of the way forward on these issues. Maybe before I do that, if there's any one or two points you want to clarify, Ms. Ibrahim, before I do that, please do, if there's any point you feel you want to clarify, but I'm in a position to do the summary.
Chairperson, just in response to the point from Honourable Helen that we should inquire further with the PP, the directors were clear that the PP has to inform the committee on the basis on which the witness is sought. And this was something that I struggled with in terms of that letter because I couldn't unpack clearly what exactly it is that they wish to put to the president. But certainly that opportunity was there. It was on that basis that the committee is sitting here considering this. And I am concerned that we must open up a back and forth. Not just because this is a question about the president, because the point that Honourable Manelli makes is sound, that regardless of who it is, the same opinion would apply and the same test applies. So that was just my concern about opening up a dialogue in terms of this, as opposed to just dealing with the directors as they stand. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Ms. Fatima Ibrahim. Colleagues, in the manner I think you have made the contribution, I think this is how we would round it up. Firstly, just to start with the two issues, Ms. Sukas, that you have raised about the protection of witnesses. I think we'll endeavor to continue doing that with evidence leaders, you as members, and at the end, the chair, who's presiding over these processes, that we'll continue doing that. But what is important, and this is what is lacking in your contribution, as this committee, we are interested in the twin processes that must go together. And you seem to be emphasizing one extreme of that. The two important processes that we want to pursue, that any witness, including the public protector that comes to us, that witness must get protection. But that protection must not be done at the expense of getting to the effect and evidence and the truth. So you can't just run with one extreme. And there's always going to be this balance. Inherent, I've made this point before, I will repeat, inherent in any cross-examination, it is a hard process. And we are, because there would be these outliers about this kind of language that would have been used, in which case caution would have been made around that. But we must always just bear in mind that it is the duty of us as this committee to ensure that we protect the witness. At the same time, we want the witness to respond fairly to all questions and put facts on the table. And we encourage witnesses, whenever they feel at this point, I would not want to answer, they're free to do that. I've answered this, they are free to do that. The last thing you want to do is to have a member or the evidence leader or as a chairperson running ahead of witnesses, protecting them because we feel it is a hard language. So it's something that I want members to all of us to be on board. We have different views in the manner that things are happening. So that's the first point I thought that I need to speak to. I am aware of, and all of us have made a caution around that, the issues of a language which might be impugning the character, insulting, bullying, or harassing. But beyond that, every witness that I identify that comes in front of this committee must have that minimum ability to attend to both issues. We can't be on the one extreme. It would not help the fairness of this process. That's the first point. The second point, Honourable Heron raises the issue of the high threshold on the removal. It's correct. That's what is in the Constitution in terms of Section 194, including the fact that at the end of this process, when the NA, National Assembly, makes its own decision, that high threshold has been set there in terms of the two-thirds. But you will not falter that the National Assembly, even in the rulemaking, will raise the bar to a high premium, because on the grounds that would have been listed in Section 194, which is issues of misconduct and incompetence and incapacity, the rules of the National Assembly raise the bar way beyond what is in the Constitution. So that's why when it comes to issues of incompetency, the rules would go far in saying it must be a sustained kind of act of incompetence, not a once-off thing. And so the panel had to look into that as to, is it just a once-off thing that would have been maybe a mistake, or it would have been a sustained act of conduct? The rules have responded to this high threshold of removal, including in the issue of misconduct and so on. So we would, in our rulemaking, we've certainly even gone beyond the high threshold asked by the Constitution in the manner that we have done that. And I think that we've got to stay in that regard, because all of these rules went to court and they were found to be legally sound and meeting this kind of a threshold. That's the second point I want to respond to. I think I take the point that members are making critically, that, and I agree, there's a lot of lessons, and I'm sure legal scholars are following this, as Honorable Melda is making the point, that this is the most extensive process of a committee, let alone the fact that this is your biggest committee ever in the National Assembly since democracy, with 36 members, and with the kind of things that it is dealing with. And so we must just continue playing in that space, because our is to achieve the fairness and rationality as both twin terms. But so far, we must think that, and I've made the point at the beginning, that yes, we must move towards the end. It's not the only thing that we're doing. There's a destiny. In any journey, there's a destiny that you must move towards. You've got to achieve that, but that we need to move with speed on these issues without any rush on the muscle. And again, we've got to strike that balance. Moving with speed without any rush, meaning that we're not going to be reckless in the way we're moving faster in this process. We're going to make sure we press all the important buttons, but this is not an elastic process that must never be ending. And so that must be respected as well. But also on the issue of the recall of witnesses, the points being made here, and maybe what we need to do with the legal services as we go forward, assisting the chair in this regard, for any witness that must be recalled, there has to be, and this must be firmly put, there must be specific issue. We don't just recall a witness because you're missing this witness or you missed a point in this witness. There must be specific issues raised that are detailed to say, we are recalling this witness. These are the specific questions that we want this witness to respond to, whether it is in writing or orally, not just recall for the sake of recalling. And the request made so far from the legal team doesn't address that. The request made is that we want half a day for each, or full day for each. You don't have stipulated details as to the recall. Van Lochenberg spent 3 days with us. The recall, what are the gaps that you are recalling this witness for? That must be put down, and we've got to insist on that, whether it will be done in writing or a because if we have to after last week, as we're going to go to the program, we'll exhaust our witnesses. We're going to allow the public protector to identify which witnesses must come forward. They might as well even object to some of those witnesses. We'll attend to that when we get to that point. But that is important. Any recall can't be just a recall for the sake of recalling. It must be a recall because there is this specific question, so that we avoid what Honorable Suka is saying, that they are going, there's a repeat question. You don't recall a witness to repeat what you have asked. Must recall a witness because there is a distinguishable gap that we must attend so that we address fairness. I think also then on the last point, I think members applauding the legal team for the consistent work that you are doing with us and the comprehensive nature of the legal opinion. Myself, as I summarize, is that members are very clear that the legal opinion is supported, and members have spoken very clear in saying, let's not, we are not asking the chair on behalf of this committee to subpoena the president. There's much clarity in that, because as Ms. Fatima is saying, the directives have stipulated a framework and the process of when we can subpoena a witness on behalf of the PP team, and we have asked the PP team to respond to what is in the directive. And what is in the directive has been exhausted. And I wouldn't want us to chase the public prosecutor team and say, give us more other reasons outside of what we've asked them. So my sense in listening to members is that the issue of the subpoena based on irrelevance for the president, we're not going to go that route. We're not doing it. We are not responding in an affirmative way to the public prosecutor team. And in fact, on behalf of this committee, listening to this discussion from the legal opinion, if there's a letter that we must write to the public prosecutor legal team, is that the subpoena for the president is declined. That's the summary. And based on the arguments listed there on that particular legal opinion. So colleagues, that's on I think on this discussion, we take note of the continuing lesson of managing that this process doesn't get abused, Honorable Manani, so that this remains a parliamentary process. And in fact, emphatically the point that President the Chair need to continue to make, that this is not a court process. Any court has got norms and standards that everybody else adheres to. This parliamentary process and oversight has got its own standards, and we are going to adhere to those standards of this, not the court standards, because we are not in court. And so that, I think that is something that we're going to have to deal with. With that, colleagues, let's move from this point with that attempted summary from my side, and then ask that the team take us through the revised program. Mr. Tembo Singoma. Before that, Honorable Miles, I see your hand.
Yes, Chairperson, sorry, my apology for disturbing the process. I just want to ask something. I agree with your summary, I think you're absolutely correct. The question I would like to ask, in terms of our own internal process, our own procedure, would it be necessary for the committee to take a formal decision in terms of the contents of the letter that the request for this subpoena has declined? I'm not sure in terms of our own process whether we need to do that formally. I think one of the colleagues in their discussion earlier this morning did propose something like that, but I'm just asking. Thank you, sir.
I have no problem with that. We have not moved from the point. I will put to the committee members and any member who is moving for us to decline the subpoena, and I'll see support for that with the reasons that have been put forward. I will invite that. It doesn't harm the process for completeness sake. Honorable Maneli.
And it's up chair to really move as already agreed with your summary that it's declined. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Maneli. You move. Any second to that? Honorable Heron.
No, Chair, I would like my request that the public protectors team be provided with an opportunity to specify what the president would be a witness for to be recorded. Thank you.
Thank you. That is noted. Honorable Jagode.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I want to support the move by Honorable Manelli. Thank you very much.
Honorable Jagode. I see other hands. Honorable Namadinga.
Thanks, Chair. I was seconding. Thank you so much. Hands I took it down.
Thank you. You're getting me lost there. That.
No, I'm saying thank you. It means thank you, Ndoriwo.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to second as well.
Okay, thank you. Then I'm hoping that the hands will go down. Honorable Suela.
Chairperson, I wanted to second. Thank you.
Old hand, I therefore note the registered point from Honorable Heron about the request for further opportunity. But I think in terms of support for us declining the subpoena request, I think the committee members have spoken quite clear on that issue. Agreed, colleagues, can we move to the next point? Mr. Tendebo Singh Omar on the revised program.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning once again to those who just joined in. Chairperson, this is a draft program of the committee, and everyone and members would be aware that we often refer to it as a working document. Chairperson, it starts with today's meeting, which is currently taking place, so we're not going to talk to that. And then the committee is proceeding with the hearings, is resuming with the hearings tomorrow, Chairperson, and Thursday. And members chair would have received a program that included Friday. However, we're informed this morning that due to unforeseen circumstances, the witness that was scheduled for Friday unfortunately would not be available, but we have since, as you will see on the screen on Monday 22 August 2022, we have since put that witness there together with Mr. Mundo Sithole. That would have been Ms. Basani Paloi. So we're continuing tomorrow, we're resuming tomorrow and Thursday. And on Friday, we will not be meeting, and then we will resume again on Monday, the 22nd, that whole week in actual fact. I know, Chair, that there might be some committees that will be meeting in that week, but we've really tried to work on this revised program, looking at the parliamentary program, and this is what we could come up with. So next week, Chairperson, is blocked the whole week for hearings. We'll have on Monday, as I've indicated, Mr. Sithole, Mundo Sithole, and Ms. Masani Paloi. Tuesday, it will be Mr. Niels van der Merwe. Wednesday, Ms. Punatshego Mogaladi. Thursday, Ms. Nelisiwe Nkabinde. And Friday, we'll have Ms. Thandi Sibanyoni. Chair, we anticipate that that will be our last, that will be the last trip for the witnesses of the committee, which is the week, next week until Friday the 26th. Chair, from there onwards, Chair, we'll just take some time off again to resume on Thursday the 8th of September with the hearings, with hearings from the witnesses of the public protector, Chairperson. So from Thursday the 8th, and then it's Friday the 9th. Chairperson, members might ask why Thursday. Unfortunately, on those weeks, the program of Parliament looks very tight, that we felt strongly that we need to afford members an opportunity to sit and attend 10 other meetings, in particular on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, because we are aware that some of the members serving in this committee are also chairing other committees. So from the 8th of September, Chair, will likely be meeting from Thursdays. We will, of course, Chairperson, seek permission from the Office of the Chief Whip. You know that Thursdays is caucus days, and in the afternoon there's often a plenary. Friday the 9th, we continue with the hearings, Chair, I hope members will notice the next day would be a Saturday. Saturday the 10th, we set as the two teams, which is the team of evidence leaders of the committee and the team of the legal representation team of Advocate Mukwebana, and we agree that maybe from that week we can start utilizing Saturdays as well, seemingly that lose some days during the course of the week. Safe to say, Chairperson, we could use Monday. We could use Mondays, but we felt that it is not going to be in the interest of this committee to have a witness on Monday and only again have a witness on a Thursday, because sometimes it would need that. It has happened in this committee that we do not finish with the witnesses planned, and it would be very difficult to carry that witness over to the Tuesday or the Wednesday as the other committees would be meeting, and also keeping that witness in Cape Town would come with huge costs to the committee. So, Chair, I'm moving on to then the next Thursday, which will then be the 15th. The 16th Friday, and then the 17th on Saturday. Also note, members, that we try to make the Saturday meetings to be virtual instead of hybrid. And then shall we proceed to the 27th, the Tuesday the 27th, to take an advantage of the day, because that is when the constituency period would start. Then going back to making use of those weekdays, which is Tuesday and Wednesday, Thursday up to Friday, and we'll see, because that week will have at least 4 days, so we've then cut off the Saturday. And then she will resume throughout the constituency period of September, end of September and the first week of October, with the public protector hearings. Chairperson, on the last day, which is hearing 39, you will see that we're planning to have those 11 days for our support staff to just work on the draft reports, but also there is a possible extension of hearing for the public protector, reason being that this committee, looking at the program, would have about 25 days of hearings, and the public protector team has also requested that they be provided with the same number of days. But there is a general agreement that if only necessary, we'll do that, because we cannot anticipate what will the witnesses be bringing before the committee at this stage. So we agree that we'll leave the program there for now. Obviously, we'll look into it. We will review the program again in the next week or so, to see if there are any changes that we need to make. But Chairperson, as for now, that is where we anticipate that this process will run through, which is the Friday, 25 November. That is without, that is Chairperson, as I've already indicated, that there might be more days allocated to the public protector team for hearings. That Chairperson, this document is a work in progress. I think it is one of at least better programs that we have presented to this committee, because previously our programs didn't even have the names of witnesses. But as you can see now, Chairperson, we do have the names of witnesses. Members will be able to prepare on time as well. And also we do have an indication of when the public protector would start bringing witnesses before the committee. So, Chairperson, I present this as the working document, which will be reviewable every second week and be presented to this committee if there are any changes that have been effected to what is being presented to you today. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Mbosi Ngoma, Committee Secretary. Honorable members, as I want to invite you, this is a critical part of our work. We would have paused last week for the purposes of allowing the teams to meet and have quality time, come back and give us indicative program that is clearly demarcated with the witnesses and timelines. As I would have said in my introductory remarks, that there's a need for us to move to a particular end point, do that with fairness and rationality, but that we, as we asked them to go, we said they have to put and say These are the witnesses that evidence leaders are bringing. It seems the program is saying to us, the witnesses that have been identified by the evidence leaders on behalf of this committee, the last witness will be next week, Friday, the 26th. And their names in terms of that. So when you come in, because what we were also interested is for both teams not to be vague, to tell us witnesses also from the public protector team. It doesn't seem that we have a listed witnesses at this stage. And there's an issue about 25 days, which is not even informed by witnesses. So I want you to come in and check if, as we requested, what is being presented is in line with what we want to have a very focused process as we march towards the end of our work. I see the head of Honorable Milam. I recognize that. Honorable Milam.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Chairperson, I want to raise a concern with regard to the program, and that is that, as quite rightly pointed out, that it does overrun on other committees and parliamentary sittings and the like. And that obviously has an impact on this committee's ability to do its work. So, Chairperson, I want to draw your attention to the way that the ESCOM inquiry, the ad hoc inquiry on ESCOM was handled. And in that matter, the committee would sit from 1800, so 6 p.m. in the evening, until roughly midnight each night after the sitting of the House, which meant that members could then attend their normal committee meetings during the day. They could attend the sessions of Parliament in the afternoon, and then they would come through to the inquiry in the evening. I'm sure Honourable Mulder, who was a member of that committee, will recall those late night sittings. And I'm not saying that that's something desirable, but I think in terms of the work that we have to do, we cannot afford to impact on other committees of Parliament or on sittings of the House by the work of this committee. So I would really like to suggest that perhaps we relook this committee sitting in the evenings rather than across committee days and parliamentary sitting days. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Member Heron. Honorable Heron, I recognize you.
Thank you, Chair. I was just wondering, Chair, how realistic this program is. I see every day from the evidence leader side there are witnesses, but there's no space if we don't finish a witness in a day like we have experienced over the last 5 weeks, that many of the witnesses have not been completed in one day of sitting, and the current program doesn't seem to provide any space for that to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Heron. Honorable Lagude.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chair, I hear what the honorable members are saying, but I want to say that this is not the first committee that has been tasked with the work that we cannot do at any given time. But what I want to suggest, Honorable Chair, is that we can have our committee meetings in the afternoons, maybe at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and that has been granted for over the years in Parliament for committees to sit that have work to do. We can work up until late with a witness, given the fact that during the constituency period, we've been having our meetings from morning until late in the evening. So if we can sit at 2 o'clock, depending on the business of the House, and if there is a need for voting, then we are granted permission to sit. Then during voting time, we can go and vote. So if there's a need for that. Then if members have questions in the house, they are given permission to attend to those. So that doesn't mean that we cannot sit, because there is no way that, Honorable Chair, we can focus only on this committee. We have many committees that we are sitting in, and we need also members to rest so that they are fresh in the morning. So if we can start maybe 2 o'clock, this committee sits, then we go maybe up until late at night, then that might assist. And also, we should make sure, Honorable Chairperson, that the cross-examination of witnesses is time-bound. It shouldn't be open-ended. If the evidence leaders are questioning, are leading the evidence with witnesses, that should be tight to say that maybe it's for 3 hours. Then the probing of witnesses by the PP's legal team also, it should be timed to say that it's 3 hours or 4 hours, then members will come in. Because if we don't time it, then we are going to miss a step there, Honorable Chair, for us to do the work. And we should make sure that when witnesses appear before the committee, so let's finish the work of that particular witness on that particular day. Thank you very much, Chairperson, because time is wasted when a witness is asked one and the same question over and over and over again. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Labode. That would have been the last, and before I ask Mr. Ngoma to quickly respond, because there are quite a number of suggestions that members are saying we must take into account in improving and enriching the program. The first suggestion would have been evening session, and there was a second one that says it's allowed if we ask for permission to meet every afternoon, even when the sittings are on, because most committees would sit in the morning. So they are quite interesting suggestions about why we need to finish, we need to continue, not break up our work. So it means, Mr. Ngoma, as you respond, there might even be other days besides Thursday. You might even start. There's nothing stopping us to do on the Tuesday and the Wednesday afternoons if such permission would be granted. And if that happens, it means it can bring the program, can reduce the kind of length that is there. And Honorable Helen would have raised the issue of whether we're not ambitious in thinking that we can have a witness on one day. In that regard, I think Honorable Heron, there would have been two or three witnesses that would have spilled over. That's Van Lochenberg and Samuels, but majority of them were finished on the time they were allocated. And if you would have checked last week, there was a process where a witness would have been done a day. Even if we finish at 6 or 7. What it requires is that we need to have both the evidence leader and the public prosecutor team given that amount of time and not just go indefinitely in that. So we have seen that practice that it can work. It does need tighter management in that regard. Mr. Ngoma?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Members, for the suggestions. They are well noted and will be taken into consideration. Chairperson, just to respond briefly, yes, next week, it's kind of, we still have a leeway for next week. Chairperson, I know that there is a scheduled members training, but we it's still like a committee, we
speak also, Chairperson, so we're taking advantage of that. But Chairperson, as Ms. Lagode had advised Chairperson, we'll look into the other days. However, Chairperson, we'll also look at the assembly program for that day before we can then apply to sit in one afternoon. So Chair, also the reason why the program, we started it on Thursday. We thought about what is being suggested here of maybe meeting on Tuesday afternoons or Wednesday afternoons until very late. But also, Chair, we thought that for maybe members that will be having meetings on Tuesdays and Wednesday, it will still be not fair for them on the work of the other committees. Because if you have you sitting on a Tuesday morning in your committee and then you sit with us until 10 o'clock the afternoon and the next morning you must still chair your committee, we need to just tread carefully there so that you are, the members are also productive on the other side. So, Chair, we will look into it in line with what is on the parliamentary program, and then we'll revise accordingly when the need arises, Chair. But it's safe to say that next week there was a general agreement between the two teams that we'll run with next week as is, and we'll try and finish each witness on the day that is allocated to that witness, which will then enable this committee, especially the committee evidence leaders, to conclude by Friday next week. So we don't foresee any spillovers next week on those witnesses that are listed there, even with Ms. Masani Baloyi being added to appear on Monday. We have agreed that if a need arises, just maybe use a few hours of the following morning to deal with whatever would be outstanding from the previous day witness, Chairperson. So yes, I will take into consideration all what is being presented by the members. And as we had said, the document is a working document which will be revised in line with the parliamentary program. Thank you very much, Chair. I hope I have responded to the members' concerns. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Milan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to address you on a slightly related matter, and that is the amount of time that is given to members to pose their questions to witnesses. We've said all along that this is not an adversarial process, it's not a judicial process. And it concerns me that members are unable to properly apply their minds if they're not able to ask questions that they don't or that they are not able to get answers to. So I do think that perhaps we need to relook how much time is allocated to members to ask questions of witnesses. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention because I do feel that we are somewhat constrained, particularly as was quite rightly pointed out. The evidence leader is given a time limit and sticks to that religiously. Then Advocate Mpofu goes way over his time and is incredibly repetitive in many of his questions. And I'm not faulting him for his cross-examination, but it does impact on our ability as members to ask the questions that we want to find out answers to and to get the clarities that we need as members to make up our minds. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, no, thank you. Two things there. Let me start with the program before I come to the time allocation. There's an answer to that. I think we have to ask the team to go back and take into account what has been raised here, and I will be working with the team to ensure that the program gets reviewed accordingly. It's clear that things are set properly, and so I'm happy that there's agreement between both teams between tomorrow and Thursday and the rest of next week when the witnesses that would have been identified on our behalf are exhausted and concluded. There's still work to be done. One is not satisfied that the public protector team at this stage has not given a list of witnesses. I insist that gets done. We just can't work in the dark. And so that has to be done so that we, by the time closer to completing next week, we have that list
of those witnesses. I think the program now would also try and have the dates for the public protector immediately thereafter. I think the other point, and so Mr. Ngoma, that even if the issue here now, because the permission is sought from the chief, we already have got some deputy chief here and others that are going to bet for us. We certainly need to have our program and motivate for our program. The advantage is that we are at M46 and sittings are at the Good Hope Center, so we are within the vicinity. And that would apply to your three line kind of session. So I think you've got to go back and see how we review this program. I will be putting a lot of pressure on you guys in that regard. On the issue of, but maybe before I go to the time, but as you do that, it will also be guided by also the witnesses, because we also don't want to be just unfair to witnesses as we stretch ourselves. So that will also inform us as we do the afternoon to evening kind of session. On the time, Honorable Milam, we've started improving with both the evidence leaders and the public protector legal team. The key thing is to give them a time slot that says you start this time, you finish that time. In between, it's always going to be an issue to manage the tactics of cross-examination, repetitions, and so on. But on the members' time, the directives are quite clear how much time the chair needs to give to members, and it's stipulated as 5 minutes, and an extra 3 minutes will take it to 8. I can just inform you that already the standard that I would have applied in allowing members to make contributions in the majority of cases has gone beyond the 8 minutes. So the standard is anything between the 10 minutes, 12 minutes, and so on. And as I informally indicated to you, every member that speaks is timed by the chair. So I can tell you now, for every witness, I know how much time this member would have been given, how much he took, because it's recorded in that. There are a few culprits who would extend beyond the 10, 12 minutes. There are others who would stay further, like Honorable Sukas, who Honorable Malda would stay within their time. So I have that. So I'm indicating that in the directives would have agreed to 5 minutes extra two. We've already gone beyond that, as I say, between 10 and 12. And I'm not sure whether you, because the directives also give the chairperson that discretion to impose those time limits. Maybe it might not be, there might not be a need. Therefore, if it has been working a bit fair now for us to change the times and give 20 minutes each and so on. Well, sometimes you might not even need that time. So go to play it according to the issues that are raised and the fairness across all members. So that point is taken. Any other comments before I proceed? So that we move from the program issue. Quickly, Honorable Ngoma, you want to say something?
Chairperson, no, I just wanted to indicate, Chair, something that I forgot to mention, that the PP legal team
indicated that we'd have the list of their witnesses before we conclude with our witnesses next week. So we're hoping to have it anytime during the course of the week, and it will be updated as such on the committee program. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you. I think that's our take on the revised program. There's some further work to be done. Rejig that, and once that is improved and amended, be circulated again to members in that regard. Thank you for that. Let's step off this item. Mr. Ngoma, the next item and the last item that the committee must be seized with is a series of the minutes of the committee that we must go through now, one by one. I see the hand before I proceed to that. Honorable Heron.
Chair, just before we do the minutes, may I just ask whether there's a preparation of the record of these, of the evidence and a transcription of the record, and if it will be given to us as it's been done, or you're going to give us a big pile of papers at the end of the process?
I say by the last, but I think the first would make sense. Let me check Mr. Ngoma and Ms. Ibrahim. I know we've got the teams working on this. Do you want to respond to that?
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thanks to Mr. Heron for that question. Chair, yes, we do have transcripts that are done by an external service provider. As such, I do have the transcript from the beginning of the hearings, which is the 11th of July, right until the 19th. But they come until the 19th of July. Those one I can certainly tell this committee that I do have them. I've just received the last bit of it today, and I'm awaiting the ones from the 1st until the 3rd, and and the request will be submitted. So Chairperson, will make them available to members as soon as possible, those that we have. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Heron is covered with a thumb up. Okay, thanks for that information. Then let's proceed to the next and the last item, the minute, taking care of our minutes. We'll do them one by one, with corrections page by page, and at the end, a mover and a seconder for each set of minutes. Mr. Ngoma?
And you, Chairperson. Chair, on the screen is the minutes of the 10th, Friday the 10th of June, Chairperson. All the other minutes prior to that had been adopted by this committee. So, yes, I present to you the minutes of the 10th of February, where Parliamentary Legal Services briefed the committee on the work that it had done up until that time, and where we also adopted the minutes of the 11th. The first page shares the standard attendance of members, right, carried on to the second page and staff members, and then Chair, that is the second page of the minutes, so you just open. And then on the next page, it's where CLSO made the presentation to the committee. The third page, the same page share with the deliberations and where the committee had its own discussions and made resolutions, and right up to the following page. And yes, Chair, so those are the minutes of the 10th of June, 2022. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ngoma. Any corrections picked up before we ask for the mover and the seconder? None. Any member moving? Honorable Mananiso?
Thank you, Chair. I want to move for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mananiso. I recognize Honorable Mantezi.
Thanks, Chair. I second the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of what transpired on that day. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Members. That first set of the 10th of June done, which was an ordinary committee meeting. Next, Mr. Ngoma.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next Chairperson is the 11th of July, when the hearings started, Chairperson, with opening statements from evidence leaders and Advocate Mbofu representing the public protector. Chairperson, as I had earlier indicated, the first two pages really is the attendance. I'm not taking it for granted, members, because I know sometimes I've been scolded for not capturing members who had been present in the meeting. Chair, as I'm talking to that, also we really request that members do log on with their names, or if they are logging on with a gadget, then indicate to the committee secretary, even if it's through WhatsApp, that it is a member that is logging on, so that we can change the name from our side. Chair, as I'm proceeding to the next stage, Chair, which is basically gives a summary of what transpired in the opening and welcoming of the meeting, right on to the opening remarks by the evidence leaders of the committee, which is in this instance Advocate Bauer. And further down, then it would be the opening remarks by Advocate Mpofu. Members, you'll notice that we don't write verbatim. We try just there and there pull out the points that we feel that are quite crucial. But all the proceedings of the committee, in particular these hearings, will form part of the final report of the committee. Chair, if I can just move on to the last page, which contains the deliberations and also then the adjournment. So, Chair, those are the minutes of the 11th of July, 2022. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The first day of inquiry, any corrections picked up? If none, do I have a mover and a seconder?
Chair.
Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you. My hand is up for some omissions with regards to some spellings.
Yes.
On number four, on deliberations, I think first sentence where they have written issued instead of issues raised.
Okay.
That's what they need to correct. And as well, lastly, Chair, before I adopt the minutes, on the second paragraph, where they are reflecting that we have adopted the minutes, they have written adopt, so they just need to write adopted. That's my omissions with regards to the spelling. However, the minutes are a true reflection of the meeting, so I move for them with those amendments.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Manani, sir. Have you picked that up, Mr. Ngoma?
We will correct it accordingly, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Any mover for the minutes?
Second, the chair, it has been moved.
Ah, it's not been moved.
Chair.
Honorable Mashaul.
I move for the secondment of the minutes.
There's no mover yet.
Honorable Manani.
I moved. Removed.
Oh, okay, you did two things at the same time. It was out of
yes.
Order. Out of order. But Honorable Mashaule, you're saying you support it?
Yes, I do, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you. Minutes duly adopted. Can we move to the next set of minutes?
Chairperson, the next set is the 12th of July, where we had Mr. Ibrahim briefing the committee on the role of the Office of the Public Protector. As indicated, Chair, the first two pages really is the attendance. Members would indicate if a member had attended and the name is not reflected there, and also, Chair, if a member had not attended but the name is reflected on the minutes. Chair, if I move to the next page, which is your normal opening, Chair, and just proceedings of the day until the last page, Chairperson, and then I present you the minutes of the 12th. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, minutes of the 12th July presented. Any corrections?
identified? None. Do we have a mover? Honorable Mgweba.
Thank you very much, Chair. I move for the adoption of this minutes, Chair.
Honorable Mgweba moves. Any second?
I second, Chair. Honorable Sowell.
Honorable Sowell seconds the minutes duly adopted. Next set.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The next set is the 30th of July. Also, hearings with Mr. Van Lochwenberg. The first two pages, Chair, and then, yes, Chair, the proceedings of the day, where you opened and Mr. Van Lochwenberg began his testimony. And the next page, and then the last page, then Chair, includes your closing remarks. Chair, these are the minutes of the 13th of July 2022. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. 13 July minutes. Any corrections? None. Any mover from those who were present? Honorable Seke.
Oh, thanks, Chair. I move for the adoption of this minutes as a true reflection of what transpired in that meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Any second from those present?
I second, Chair. Honorable Sowell, I was present. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sowell. Minutes seconded and minutes duly adopted. Next set, Mr. Ngoma.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next set is the minutes of Thursday the 14th. We continued with Mr. Van Lochwenberg's cross-examination. Chair, that is your page 2, which is attendance register, then your page 3. And page 4, which is the last page of the minutes. Chairperson, those are the minutes of Thursday, the 14th of July, 2022.
14 July minutes, any corrections picked up? None. Any mover, Honorable Godwin?
Chair?
Yes.
Are you asking me to move for the adoption of the minutes?
You are on the platform, Honorable Godwin. You were present.
Yes, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you.
Under duress.
Honorable Conway moves. Any second?
Honorable Grace seconds, Chair.
Honorable Grace seconds, and therefore minutes duly adopted. Can we move to the next set?
So, Chairperson, the next set is Friday, 15th July. Chair, starting with the 2 pages of attendance. And Chairperson, as you can see there, Dr. M. Conway is there. Thank you, Chair. And then we move down, Chairperson. This was, as I indicated, I think the last day of cross examination of Mr. Van Lochwenberg by the PP team, PP legal team. And also the members had raised a number of questions. Members, rest assured, as I had indicated, we would not put all the questions here, but we had formally taken those questions down and they were sent to the Office of the Public Protector, a response of which was provided. Chairperson, those are the minutes of Friday, the 15th of July.
15 July, hearing minutes. Any corrections picked up by those present? None. Any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
I move, Chair.
Honorable Polangola moves. Any seconder?
Chairperson. Honorable Manani, so I second the minutes as a reflection of the meeting. Thank you.
Honorable Sebule Manani, so seconds. Therefore, minutes duly adopted. Thank you. Proceed to the next set.
Chairperson, the next set was the meeting of this committee held on one of special days of this country where we celebrate the International Nelson Mandela Day. It was the 18th of July in 2022 when Mr. Tebogo Kekana appeared before the committee. First two pages, as indicated, is the attendance register, and thereafter, Chairperson, so third page, fourth page. This would be my error, Chairperson, supposed to be Mr. Kekana. I know Honorable Gwando probably has picked this up. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are the minutes of Monday, the 18th. Thanks, sir.
18 July, inquiry minutes, any corrections picked up? None. Do I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Tseke?
Yes, Chair, I was part of that meeting. Can I move for the acceptance of this minutes as a true reflection of what transpired? Thank you.
Are you asking or are you moving?
No, I'm moving. I'm confirming that I was part of this meeting, Chair. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Move for the adoption of the minutes. Any seconder?
I second, Chairperson, Honorable Swele.
Honorable Violet Swele seconds, and therefore minutes duly adopted. We move to the next set.
Thank you, Chairperson. These are the minutes of the 19th of June, which is the last set that we'll be adopting today. 19th of July, Chairperson. 19th of July, which is the last set that we'll be adopting for today, Chair. I didn't want to bring a whole bunch of minutes for members. I wanted members to be able to go through them, Chairperson. So this will be the last for today, but definitely in our next meeting, we'll be adopting more minutes. Chairperson, the first two pages, as you can see there, Mr. Dr. Melda was in attendance as well, Chair. He is in attendance today, and Ms. Sukers was also in attendance. Chairperson, the first two pages, attendance register, and then Chairperson, these the minutes of Friday, of Tuesday, 19 July 2022. Thank you, Chair.
19 July, set of minutes of the inquiry. Any corrections picked up by those present? None. Do I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes, Honorable Sukers?
I knew you were coming for me, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Sukers. Honorable Sukas moves for adoption of the minutes. Any seconder, Honorable Hermans?
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the, I second the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you.
Honorable Julie Hermans seconds, and therefore minutes duly adopted. Thank you, Honorable Members, for that. Thank you, Mr. Ngoma. Then it means that we must, I think we'll have to deal. We don't have a full packed, find a way to beat them, to eat them bit by bit. I see the hand of Honorable Milan.
Chair, I'm not sure if this is the appropriate place for it. I didn't want to, you know, insert this into the agenda at any other point. But I want to raise a concern with you relating to a rather disgraceful incident that happened on Thursday afternoon in the hearing, during which you were totally disrespected and you were spoken over. There was a lot of backwards and forwards going on, and unfortunately, I think that if any other people had done it, they probably would have been thrown off the platform. So I want to bring that to your attention and ask for you to deal with matters of that nature consistently. I'm not for one second proposing that anyone be gagged, but I do think that the committee, you as the chairperson, and its members need to be treated with respect. And unfortunately, that seems to be going out the window at a rapid rate, as we saw late on Thursday afternoon. So, Chair, I'm going to leave it in your hands, but I do think that we need to be a little bit firmer in the way that that is dealt with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Myla. With the nameless person, I think I can remember that. What you were raising, I take that homework as we continue managing the process. Thanks for raising the issue, so that we're able to reflect both fairness and fairness. The two go together. So I thank you for raising that. We'll apply our minds as to how we need to nip it in the bud. Sooner than later. Thank you for that. Colleagues, at that point, the time now is 25 minutes past 12. We're scheduled our meeting up until 1. So you are given extra 35 minutes. And on that point, we adjourn our meeting. Thank you very much for your attendance and contribution. We note the homework you would have given us post this meeting. All the things that we need to do with the legal office, the committee support, and the evidence leaders, and the task we must do in connecting with the team of the public protector. We will see each other tomorrow at M46. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Salo.